It's time to Fade the Chalk.
Fade the Chalk.
Presented by the FTN Network, helping you win your fantasy leagues and dominate in DFS. And now, here are your hosts, Derek Brown and Adam Pfeiffer.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back. Monday, September 20th, 2021, and week two just about in the books. And look, I feel like we say this every week, but week two was crazy. A ton of injuries, ton of huge performances, plenty of bad performances. We're going to break it all down here on the solo edition week two review episode of Fade the Chalk. Hopefully everybody had a successful week two. Mine was solid. Could have been better, but you know, the Bills won 35-0. Massive win. So that always helps. But there was a lot here. I mean, like, injuries were clearly, I think, the storyline of this week. I tried to track as many of them as possible, but I feel like every time I did, more popped up throughout the rest of the night. So we're going to break down all the games from Sunday, talk about what stood out, what's important, what we should apply going forward, injuries, all that great stuff. So let's get right to it, honestly, with Carolina 26, New Orleans 7. Carolina 2-0, their offense looks pretty good. Darnold's looking pretty good. And in years past, this was a defense to target. I'm not so sure anymore. They have a ton of young talent and speed on the defense. Brian Burns, I think, is going to be, like, this time next year, like a top 15 defensive player in football. They're going to be, I mean, we're already seeing it. I mean, I know the Saints offense isn't the Saints offense of three, four years ago, but 7 points. I mean, Alvin Kamara did nothing in this game. You're not worried about him. Marquez Callaway, he's running a ton of routes the first 2 weeks of the season. He's not doing anything. So, honestly, like, Callaway's droppable. I honestly think he's droppable. Like, you're not comfortable starting him, and there's plenty of other receivers that you can pick up. So, I have no problem dropping Marquez Callaway. That's really it for the Saints, right? Bad game from Jameis. He comes back down to earth. The offense just did nothing in this game. Tony Jones is still someone you want on your bench. And Alvin Kamara is obviously going to have better days going forward. For Carolina, though, I mean, Christian McCaffrey now has 59 touches through 2 weeks. Just, he is the ultimate cheat code in fantasy football. You're starting him forever. He's unbelievable. I want to talk about DJ Moore, though. So he had a nice week one, right? I think it was like 80 yards. Then he follows it up with 8 catches for 79 yards and a touchdown on 11 targets, leads the team. He now has a 28% target share through 2 weeks. He now has at least 80 yards or more in 10 of his last 17 games, obviously dating back to last season. He's got 14 catches for 159 yards and a score through 2 games this season. They're moving him around the formation. His ADOT last year was at 13, I believe it was 13.7. And this year it's at 9.5. So a huge thing about DJ Moore last year was, yes, he's a great player. He can win at all levels of the field, but he was really only getting downfield targets, and that was affecting his catch rate and his efficiency. Now we're seeing more screens. I think he has like 4 or 5 targets off screen so far this season. He's still getting some downfield targets, but there's more intermediate and short targets in between there. I mean, he has 11 targets compared to a combined 9 for Robbie Anderson and Terrace Marshall. DJ Moore, he's always been a high yardage guy, but the catches are going up because the targets are more consistent and the ADOT's lower. And he got an end zone target in this game and scored. Like, he's getting end zone targets now. I mean, it's game over if this continues. He's going to be a top 12 receiver. Darnold's playing well. The schedule is ridiculous for Carolina. They start off the season, obviously, with the Saints in this game. Week one, they played... Who did they play week one? I actually don't even remember they played week one. It was so much going on, I forgot. But now he gets Houston on Thursday Night Football, and then Dallas. So DJ Moore, I mean, you have to feel really excited about him. Robbie Anderson, he's starting to get a lot more downfield targets. Like, his ADOT is massive. I wonder if they're just kind of flipping the roles between these two, because last year, Robbie Anderson was the guy running the short crossers and the drags and intermediate stuff, and DJ Moore was running more routes down the field. So, I mean, I have a little bit of concern for Robbie Anderson right now. The good thing is he was such a ridiculous value in drafts in the offseason that it wasn't like you know, draft him with a massively high pick or anything like that. So that's definitely good. And then, yeah, like McCaffrey's ridiculous. Terrace Marshall's still somebody I think you should hold on your bench. You know, he's still playing a lot in the slot, which is nice. He's going to have some nice games here. But until this team goes more three wide, because Terrace Marshall's not playing in two wide sets. So until they go more three wide, he's not going to be someone you want to trust and start in fantasy. Let's move on to the Bears. 20-17 victory over the Bengals. This game definitely had an obvious injury here. Andy Dalton leaves this game, non-contact injury. I think he came back in for a play or two and then was ruled out the rest of the game. So we saw Justin Fields here. The box score doesn't tell the whole story here. He had 60 passing yards on 13 attempts with a pick, but Allen Robinson actually dropped a touchdown pass in this game. That was a really good throw from Fields. And then Fields, I mean, 10 carries for 31 yards in limited action. We know he's going to run. And Andy Dalton sounds like he could miss week three against the Browns. So Justin Fields, if you stashed him in redraft, obviously he was drafted in Superflex and Dynasty. Week three might be the time where we can deploy Justin Fields into our starting lineups for fantasy. Dave Montgomery gets a ton of work again. He has 23 touches in this game. Damien Williams only has 4. In week one, the snaps for the Bears running backs were a little bit tighter than you might hope if you're rostering David Montgomery. But he did leave for a handful of plays with a minor injury, and then he came back. So you look at it in this game, Montgomery, 52 of the 65 snaps, so it's obviously a lot better. Again, the Bears offense struggled in this game. Both offenses struggled for much of this game, but that workload and the touches and the volume for Dave Montgomery, you love to see. Darnell Mooney got going here. He was Justin Fields' guy, which is one of the reasons I was so high on Darnell Mooney in the offseason. 6 for 66 on 8 targets. Darnell Mooney might start to become more reliable for fantasy if Justin Fields is under center, because with Andy Dalton, they were not throwing down the field at all. They just didn't. And Justin Fields will do that, and he was the most accurate deep ball passer in college football last year. So I think stock is rising for Darnell Mooney. Robinson scores a touchdown in this game, but he only has 2 for 24. Again, like I said, he dropped a second touchdown. I'm not like freaking out about Robinson, but I'm starting to kind of question if this offense, and again, we haven't seen Justin Fields really play much at all, and he hasn't played much with Robinson, right? He didn't play with Robinson in the preseason at all. So, and then Cole Kmet, 1 target, 1 catch, no yards. But again, give me the routes, give me the snaps. He doubled Jimmy Graham's routes. He more than doubled his snaps. That's what I'm chasing, especially for tight ends in that back end, tight end one, you know, tight end two range. So don't drop Cole Kmet. For the Bengals, Joe Burrow struggles mightily here. I think he threw interceptions on 3 consecutive passes. Tyler Boyd, I was really high on this week, and he got there. Solid game, 7 catches, 73 yards on 9 targets. I think we're going to be able to see slot receivers against the Bears this year. We saw it with Cooper Kupp in week one. Tyler Boyd, again, good game here in week two. He has 9 targets. T. Higgins has 10 targets, leads the team 6 for 60 and a touchdown. He continues to be, and this is dating back to last season as well, their end zone target. He gets the looks from inside the 5-10 yard line, which is great for T. Higgins. And then Ja'Marr Chase had another long touchdown. I think it was a 42-yard touchdown. It's weird, man. It's weird that these really incredible prospects coming out of college end up actually being good despite ridiculous reports in the offseason about drops. It's weird how that happens. But no, like I'm saying, like with the Bears, I mean, Marquise Christian is their slot corner. He gave up 2 touchdowns in slot coverage in week one. That's why I really like Tyler Boyd. So keep an eye on that. Keep an eye on slot receivers against the Chicago Bears going forward. But other than that, I mean, Mixon, he had a rough game, but the volume is all you care about. He had 21 of the, I mean, nobody else even had a carry on this team. Mixon at 20. Chris Evans and Samaje Perine combined for 1 touch. So Mixon had, 21 of the 22 running back touches in this game. He's getting elite usage, elite route running for a running back. That's all you care about. The Bears didn't have Eddie Goldman in this game, so you thought it might have been a better spot for Mixon. But again, this Bengals offensive line, we forget about it sometimes when we look at their skill players, and especially when Ja'Marr Chase makes plays, but this is still a very bad offensive line. So unfortunately, against good defenses, you're going to have games like this where Joe Mixon averages 3.5 yards per carry, but the volume is all you care about. End of the day, the volume's great, and it's going to continue to be great. Cleveland 31, Houston 21. This game got off to a weird start where everybody was excited to play Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt, and it starts off with, I believe, an Andy Janovich fullback dive for a touchdown, and then the Texans offense is moving the ball well. Tyrod's been playing fantastic football, and it continued in this game, but he suffers a hamstring injury, doesn't return, so we see Davis Mills come in the second half. I believe Tyrod's already been ruled out for week 3, which is, again, Thursday night against the Carolina Panthers. So we're going to see most likely Davis Mills start, which, hello, Panthers DST. Brandon Cooks, 14 targets. He had 14 of the 28 targets for the Texans in this game. I believe Nico Collins also left with injury in this contest. So Brandon Cooks, he wasn't the most exciting pick in drafts, but volume is king. And this guy now has 21 targets for 2 weeks. He scored in this game. He's been great. And it's been, I understand he's played with elite quarterbacks for most of his career and elite offenses. This is the first case he hasn't, but he's just produces when he's on the field. And even with Davis Mills under center, I think we have to view him as at least like a wide receiver 3 against Carolina. And going forward, if he's going to continue to see this volume, 14 targets next, nobody else on the Texans had more than 2. I think it was Nico Collins. I think Amendola left with this game with injury as well. Brandon Cooks is going to see like a 25% target share most weeks. For the backfield, it continues to be Mark Ingram, 14 carries in this game, adds a reception. If you're desperate, you're starting Mark Ingram. David Johnson's still the pass catching running back, but I still don't want anything to do with this backfield. I just don't. So we'll see what the Texans offense looks like with Davis Mills under center on Thursday night football. For Cleveland, Baker left this game with a shoulder injury. He did return, so that's good. Jarvis Landry left early in this game, didn't return. So Landry, with Odell Beckham already not playing, and Odell Beckham got ruled out on Wednesday. So he got ruled out pretty early in the week. And now Landry, who left early, MCL injury, he's going to have an MRI today. That MRI, the results might come out when you're listening to this, but not exactly promising news. If Odell can't play and Jarvis isn't there, we're going to see even more, focal point for the Browns with Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. Maybe Chubb can get some more receptions, which would be massive for him. But obviously, they'll have to rely more on Anthony Schwartz, Donovan Peoples-Jones, and the tight ends. They're going to use all three tight ends, Austin Hooper, Harrison Bryant, and David Njoku. But this is obviously something we need to keep an eye on. Speaking of the backfield, Chubb, 11 carries. Kareem Hunt had more carries than Nick Chubb in this game, which was kind of surprising. But Chubb remains incredibly efficient. 11 carries, 95 yards and a touchdown. He broke an impressive 26-yard touchdown run where that's all he does is break off 20-plus yard runs. He only has one reception. So did Kareem Hunt. The Browns offense, they just didn't run a lot of plays in this game. A lot of short fields. The Texans actually were driving the ball, like I said, a lot in this game. So, Nick Chubb, does he have the ceiling of a top 5 running back if he's not going to catch passes? And Kareem Hunt's going to take 8 to 10 carries away? Probably not, but the production's going to be there like it has been the first 2 weeks, where he's run for 80-plus yards in both games and now has 3 rushing touchdowns. And it's like, yeah, they had an Andy Janovich fullback dive touchdown. Demetric Felton took a screen 50 or 33 yards to the house. With a really impressive touchdown that took away possessions. So I'm not picking up Donovan Peoples-Jones or Anthony Schwartz probably unless I'm in the deepest of leagues, but obviously in deeper leagues, assuming Landry misses time and with Odell's situation, they become a lot more interesting. Let's go to a very interesting game here. A lot of injuries and a lot of news. Rams 27, Colts 24. Darrell Henderson suffers a rib injury in this game in the fourth quarter, did not return. Prior to that injury, it was the same thing as we saw in week 1. Absolute workhorse role for Henderson, 90-plus percent of the snaps, pretty much all of the running back touches, all of the targets, all of the routes. He looked good in this game too. 13 carries for 53 yards and a touchdown. He adds 3 receptions for 29 yards. I've seen a lot of people from the Rams, like on Twitter, talking about the injury didn't seem serious. Maybe it was more precautionary. But Henderson's missed a lot of time with injuries in his career, so we have to keep an eye on this. Sony Michel had all 10 of his carries after Henderson left in the fourth quarter. Had 10 for 46 in the fourth quarter. Was efficient. I know it's Tampa Bay in week 3, you know, the most dominant run defense in the NFL. But if Henderson's out in this offense that looks borderline elite with Matthew Stafford and Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods, they're at home. I mean, Michelle's got to be looked at least a low-end RB2, high-end flex if he's starting, because they're not going to give Jake Funk the football. It's going to be Sony Michel getting probably the same workload and same opportunities that Daryl Henderson had been getting before he got hurt. So have to keep an eye on that. If Henderson's good to go and he's fine, again, you're probably starting him in the same range, right? Low-end RB2, very high-end flex with a path to at least 17 touches more often than not. Stafford, again, solid game, 278 and 2 touchdowns. But it's Cooper Kupp, man. I mean, I'll take the L here. D-Bro, if you're listening, I was on Robert Woods over Cooper Kupp in the offseason. And it's not like Robert Woods has been bad, right? 5 for 64 on 9 targets. He adds a couple rushing yards. He scored in week 1. It's just that Cooper Kupp has been out of this world. I mean, absolutely absurd. Cooper Kupp through 2 weeks, 16 catches on 21 targets for 270 yards and 2 touchdowns. I mean, I was listening to the broadcast and they were saying that like Cooper Kupp and Stafford get to practice like 2 hours before everybody else and work on plays and routes. And it's like, it shows. I mean, Kupp's making plays everywhere in the end zone, after the catch, deep down the field. It's tough to find a lot of receivers you're starting comfortably over Cooper Kupp right now, right? Right? So it's like Robinson or Cooper Kupp, Allen Robinson or Cooper Kupp, probably Cooper Kupp, Cooper Kupp or, let's go Cooper Kupp or trying to find a good example. Like the Seattle receivers, I think that's got to be close, right? Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf. I think at this point that has to be considered close. Cooper Kupp and AJ Brown. That's got to be close. Would you take Cooper Kupp over all 3 Tampa Bay receivers? Definitely over Brown and definitely over Evans, in my opinion. We'll get to Evans later, but I think that's a decision you probably make. Cooper Kupp over the Vikings receivers. I think you're taking Cooper Kupp now. So he's clearly been one of the 5 best players in fantasy. Again, 2 weeks, but the quarterback upgrades giving him more downfield opportunities, which was obviously massive. And then clearly, he is just making plays after the catch in the end zone. It's been fun to watch. 9 for 163 and 2 touchdowns on 11 targets in this game. Like I mentioned, Robert Woods, 9 targets, 5 for 64. It's not as exciting, but you feel good about his floor each week. Just the ceiling has obviously been with Cooper Kupp. And of course, as soon as I finally am in on Tyler Higbee, 1 catch for 8 yards. Now, This happens with Higbee in this offense, right? Some weeks he's heavily involved. Other weeks he's not so much involved in the offense at all. But again, similar to Cole Kmet, but at more of a higher end. At the end of the day with tight ends, especially if you don't have Waller or Kelsey, or I guess Hockenson, you're chasing routes and you're chasing snaps. And after playing 100% of the snaps for the Rams in week 1, Tyler Higbee played, I believe he played every snap again. He did. Played every snap. Cooper Kupp, Tyler Higbee played every snap. But I think Henderson was on pace to play every snap or close to it. So, better days ahead for Tyler Higbee. This team's going to be scoring a lot of points. He's playing every snap. He's playing with a great quarterback and a great offense. So, not worried about Higbee despite the disappointing game. For the Colts, though, Carson Wentz, weird game. Like, he was all over the place in this game. Had a shovel pass for a pick, fumbles, sacks. Then he suffers an ankle injury. I think a report came out like 10 minutes ago, too, that Wentz is apparently dealing with multiple ankle sprains, which definitely isn't good. Jacob Eason came in and immediately threw an interception to Jalen Ramsey. Ian Rappaport reports that Carson Wentz sprained both ankles in week 2's loss against the Rams. Not good. I mean, we see Michael Pittman have a huge game alongside Carson Wentz, 8 for 123 on a team high 12 targets. I mean, that's concerning if Jacob Eason has to start. especially given the fact that the Colts offensive line is a little bit banged up right now. I mean, Pittman, you like the performance. He's shown signs, and this is another sign of how good he can be. But you don't feel great about starting him. And then Zach Pascal now has been kind of the end zone target for this team. He scored another end zone touchdown. He's got three touchdowns through 2 weeks. You're already kind of not on the fence about starting him anyway. But if Jacob Eason's starting, I mean, just it puts a damper on this entire offense. And then there's Jonathan Taylor, who really weird game from him. 15 carries, 51 yards, no touchdowns. His receiving game comes back down to earth. Just one catch on one target for 2 yards. Jonathan Taylor, if you have Jonathan Taylor on your fantasy team, watching this game must have been brutal. He got stuffed inside like at the goal line multiple times. So you look at the numbers now. Jonathan Taylor has 6 carries from inside the 5-yard line this year, most in the NFL. He has 100% of the Colts carries from inside the 5-yard line. He obviously has not scored. I believe he had a touchdown called back in week 1. So it's definitely a little bit unlucky for Jonathan Taylor with the red zone and the touchdowns. I will say, and I'm not really freaking out, but I will say a little bit not thrilled to see after not being, I don't think he played a single snap in week 1, but after seeing that and then Marlon Mack comes in and he plays some snaps, and there weren't just like, you know, 2 or 3 snaps. I believe Marlon Mack played, Marlon Mack played, I think, 12 snaps in this game. And especially, like, I think he had a couple series where he played down the stretch. Don't love to see that if you have Jonathan Taylor on your team. And now you have the potential quarterback downgrade. I mean, again, it's a little bit unlucky. The fact that he's getting the goal line opportunities is great, and he's getting a ton of them. He will start to convert them. It was against Aaron Donald and company. And he's got the Titans next week, who just gave up 2 short yardage touchdowns to Chris Carson in week 2. And so far this season, teams are scoring on 75% of the red zone trips against the Titans. It's, I believe, a bottom 10 rate in the NFL. So better days ahead from Jonathan Taylor. But I will say, let's keep an eye on this Marlon Mack usage if he continues to play snaps going forward. So that, again, you didn't love to see that. Let's go to Denver and Jacksonville. The Broncos improved to 2-0. They win 23-13 over the Jags. Look, man, I know it's been 2 weeks against the Giants and Jags, but Teddy Bridgewater looks pretty good. 328 and 2 touchdowns in this game. He's been making accurate passes, escaping pressure really well. He's always been accurate. And now we start to see him take shots down the field with Cortland Sutton. Sutton, first game without Jerry Jeudy. Enjoys a career game, right? 159 yards, that's a career high, 9 catches, 12 targets. He had 35% of Denver's targets in this game. He had well over 200 air yards in this game. He had a 54-yard catch down the field, a 35-yard catch down the field. He was awesome. And, like, you look at week 1, bad matchup against Bradbury. The Giants more vulnerable to the slot where Jeudy played, like, 75% of the snaps before getting hurt. Made sense. It was more of a Jeudy game. Now with Sutton, though, like, Judy's going to miss 4 to 6 weeks, and it sounds like it might be closer to 6 with the ankle injury. I mean, Sutton could be, for the foreseeable future, low-end wide receiver 2. Bridgewater looks good, so that's great to see. Tim Patrick was a popular waiver wire streamer. I was really high on him. The touchdown helped. He only had 3 for 37, but he did score. Noah Fant also scored in this game, but they're starting to use Albert O a lot, I notice. Albert O's playing a decent amount of snaps, running plenty of routes. He actually had the same amount of receptions as Fant in this game and 2 less targets. So I don't think you're not sitting Noah Fant, but like if you can trade him for maybe Gronk or maybe even Higbee, I might at least try to do that because you have opportunities to do that, right? You can tell somebody, look, Noah Fant scored, he's getting targets, Jerry Judy's not going to be back for 6 weeks, and maybe, or you can just upgrade at another position. I think that's an opportunity you could try to do. But yeah, Sutton, you love this usage. Obviously much better than in week 1. And Jacksonville, man, I just been on it all offseason, or all to start the season, right? 10 100-yard receivers they allowed last season, most in the NFL. Then what do they do to start this season? 100-plus to Brandon Cooks, 159 to Cortland Sutton. They face DeAndre Hopkins next week. Good luck. Target receivers against Jacksonville all year long. The backfield I mean, what do you say? It's once again a 50-50 split. Javonte, 13 carries. Melvin Gordon, 13 carries. It does appear that Gordon's getting more of the passing downs work. And Javonte's getting more of the short yardage work. So if you're just debating each week, say you have somehow both running backs, if you're debating who to start each week, I'm probably saying if it's any sort of PPR league, you go Melvin Gordon. If it's not, you go Javonte. And Javonte was more efficient, 64 yards on his 13 carries compared to 31 yards on Gordon's 13 carries. Gordon did play about 13 more snaps than Javonte Williams. They have a pretty interesting matchup against the Jets next week. The Jets continue to allow a ton of rushing touchdowns, right? James White and Damien Harris scored rushing touchdowns against them last week. In week one, McCaffrey didn't, but this would be awesome if it was just one running back. Unfortunately, it's going to continue to be two. Maybe that changes down the second half of the season, like we see with a lot of rookie running backs, and Javonte becomes a potential league winner, but not the case as of right now. For Jacksonville, good to see James Robinson get the majority of the work over Carlos Hyde. He has 14 touches to Hyde's two. So you love to see that. Was pretty efficient. 17 receiving yards on three catches, 47 yards on 11 carries. The offense still appears to be pass heavy, and the offense doesn't look. I mean, Trevor Lawrence looks like a rookie right now. He's making some bad reads. He's got 5 interceptions so far this season. He had 118 yards on 33 attempts. And I get it, Denver's defense is good, but I think better days are definitely ahead. I like him next week. It should be fun against Arizona. Laviska Shenault, I think I saw a stat that he had the fewest receiving yards in NFL history for a player with 5 receptions or 5 targets. I want to find the exact. It was from NBC Sports Edge. Shenault was the first player in NFL history to have more than 5 targets and fail to gain any yards, according to NBC Sports Edge. That is insane. 2 catches for negative 3 yards, and now he's dealing with a shoulder injury. He is undergoing an MRI on Monday. I mean, yikes. That's not good. We'll have to see on that. And oh, by the way, look who scored a touchdown again. Marvin Jones. 6 for 55 and a touchdown on a team-high 11 targets. He had 11 of the 33 targets. I don't victory lap. I don't like it. I don't do it. At least I try not to. But when it's Marvin Jones, and it's just years of telling people he's undervalued and people don't respect how good he is, it gets to a point where it's almost annoying. And all he does is score touchdowns. All he does is make plays. This team's going to be behind a lot. Now LaVisca's banged up. Familiarity still with Daryl Bevel. Trevor Lawrence, we saw in training camp, was getting extra practice time before and after practice with Marvin Jones. I mean, if you don't think Marvin Jones is the wide receiver one on this team, I don't really know what else to tell you. And like, if LaVisca's healthy going forward, I mean, he's got like Deebo Samuel type usage where it's like, and Deebo's actually getting more downfield work this year. So maybe I should say last year and the year before Deebo Samuel type usage, but his average depth of target is like 3, and it's probably even lower after this week. I mean, it's bad. It's really bad. And I love LaVisca. I think he's an incredible player, and he can make plays on short targets and make plays after the catch. But he's like with Chark and Jones on the outside, like they're not going to throw passes. They're using him as a gadget player. And it's like, I get it, but it's very frustrating. And Chark, 1 catch for 19 yards on 4 targets. Like these games will happen. Like him and Marvin Jones are wide receiver 3, so they're not going to be great every week. But when Marvin Jones is getting the touchdowns and end zone targets and he's the number one option in the passing game, yeah, like the discrepancy between Jones and Chark and LaVisca offseason made zero sense to me. Marvin Jones, I mean, high-end wide receiver 3 right now. He's got Arizona in week 3. I mean, unless you're loaded receiver, you're probably starting him. You're probably feeling pretty confident about it. So shout out to the GOAT, Marvin Jones. We've been here. All right, this game really helped my anxiety. Buffalo 35, Miami 0. So the Bills have played 2 pretty weak offensive lines in Pittsburgh and Miami. Their pressure rate has been through the absolute roof with Jerry Hughes. A.J. Epineza in year 2 has looked awesome. Gregory Rousseau as a rookie, he fell in the draft because of his pro day and his test results. He had 2 sacks and a bunch of pressures in this game. He looks awesome. I mean, this defense, I've been saying it all offseason, they're going to be better. They could be the top five unit this year. And my goodness, do they look the part. Because we know the secondary is good, right? You have a top three corner. You have a top tier safety duo in the NFL. You have linebackers that fly over the field in Milano and Tremaine Edmonds. Star Lotulelei is back to help. I mean, there was a play where Miami, literally three Miami offensive linemen blocked Star Lotulelei. Like, the Bills defense is good. And I'm excited about it. The offense, you'd like to see him help out. I mean, they scored 35 points in this game. Josh Allen, people are worried. I get it. The efficiency was bad. He had, you know, 5.5 yards per attempt, 179 yards, 2 touchdowns and a pick, 35 rushing yards. From a fantasy perspective, the day should have been better. He had a 9-yard touchdown run on third down where he slid into the end zone. But the new rule where you're kind of giving yourself up, they ruled him down at the 1, and then Zach Moss came in and scored a rushing touchdown. Zach Moss, by the way, was active for this game, scored 2 short yardage touchdowns in this game. They were both impressive runs. Singletary started the game with a 46-yard rushing. It was a weird game for Buffalo's offense where they have 3 rushing touchdowns to the running backs. You just don't see that. But they ran the ball well. They ran the ball effectively. Stephon Diggs, 4 for 16, a touchdown on 8 targets. I mean, the Bills, like, I'm not worried about the Bills offense. They have Washington this week, and then it really opens up for them in terms of schedule, right? It's not that Miami's a great defense, right? Their secondary is good. We know that. But you look at the Bills going forward after their home in week 3 against Washington. Then they have Houston at home, then Kansas City, which should be a shootout, then at Tennessee, who can't stop anybody, then a bye, then Miami again, Jacksonville, the Jets, the Colts. So it's a pretty nice stretch for Josh Allen and the Bills offense. They're going to get going. They have too much talent. And we knew Josh Allen was going to regress, right? And yes, I will be the first to admit Josh Allen has not looked great this year so far. He's missing some throws. He's almost playing like he's like kind of too excited, right? I think he needs to kind of relax, get in rhythm. And we did see that in the second half of this game. So if anybody's worried, I know we had a touchdown this game, I would try to throw out some offers for Stephon Diggs. Absolutely. Absolutely. Miami, Tua Tagovailoa, rib injury. X-rays, I believe, were negative, but he's dealing with bruised ribs. I mean, he could miss time. Jacoby Brissett came in. I mean, there's really not much to say about this offense. It was bad. They had drops. They had fumbles. They had turnovers. They got sacked at will. Miles Gaskin's not getting the ball. It's weird all of a sudden, but I think the player you feel most comfortable starting for Miami might be Jalen Waddle. It depends on the Will Fuller situation. Obviously, he was eligible to come back from suspension this week, but he didn't play due to personal reasons. Hope everything's good with him. If he's not back, Jalen Waddle, 8 targets in this game, scored last week. I think Waddle's somebody you feel, even with Jacoby Brissett potentially under center, Waddle's game-breaking ability, I think you feel pretty decent about him as a flex. Parker's fine. Gesicki, I was never on in the offseason. And maybe things change if Fuller's not there because maybe they can play him in the slot more. But they've been playing Waddle in the slot plenty. Parker's going to primarily play on the outside. We know that. But I just don't see the ceiling with Mike Gesicki. Because the snaps, again, in week 1, they were brutal. Like, he played behind Durham Smythe in week 1. Better this week, I will say that. 47 snaps. Shaheen and Durham Smythe both played 21, though. The routes were there for Gesicki. 37 routes. I still don't feel great about it, but he's in that range, right? He's in that Jonnu Smith, Cole Kmet range, where if you don't have a good tight end, you're probably starting him and hope they score, which is a lot of tight ends. But, you know, as a player, we know Gesicki has a ceiling. I just worry about the role and the usage in this offense, honestly. But we'll see on Tua. It took a huge hit. Again, I believe x-rays were negative, but bruised ribs, he could miss time. He definitely could miss some time. Patriots 25, Jets 6. Let's get the Jets out of the way. I mean, rookie quarterbacks against Bill Belichick. undefeated, or defeated, I should say. Zach Wilson, 4 picks, no touchdowns, 210 yards. I mean, was Adam Gase coaching the Jets in this game? Was he back? It's possible. We did see the backfield kind of start to shift. It was Tevin Coleman in the preseason in week one. Michael Carter has 11 carries for 59 yards. Ty Johnson has 12 for 50, so both were pretty efficient. I'm still not starting anybody in the Jets' backfield. Michael Carter has probably been dropped after last week. Don't hate him as a, you know, end of your bench stash, but I don't see a situation where I feel pretty comfortable starting anybody here. Corey Davis with a dud. J.C. Jackson, a lot of man coverage. J.C. Jackson shadows a lot. He shadowed in week one. Don't have the exact numbers, but I believe he probably shadowed in this game. Braxton Berrios, I mean, if you want to talk about the Jets offense, Braxton Berrios led the team with 11 targets. So I don't think you're feeling good about starting anybody in the Jets outside of Corey Davis in three receiver leagues. For the Patriots, again, a conservative offense, but got the job done. Damien Harris, by the way, Ramondre Stevenson was inactive for this game. James White, 5 for 20. He scored a goal line touchdown in this game, and he has 6 targets, 6 for 45. James White, he was almost free in drafts. And now, obviously, things change with Mac Jones being under center, but I mean, you have to view James White as a weekly PPR flex in deeper leagues, and maybe not even in deeper leagues. 12-team leagues, probably viable as well. So the usage, the receptions, the connection's been really good between Mac Jones, and they're so conservative that James White is going to be heavily involved. So he actually led the team in snaps just ahead of Damien Harris. Ran nearly 20 pass routes. So James White, definitely somebody that if you got the end of your draft, you're feeling great about right now. He's going to be weekly, just kind of steady 8 to 10 PPR points, I think. I think that's what he's going to continue to get. And like games like this where he scores, you're feeling awesome. That's really it for New England. I mean, Damien Harris had an incredible touchdown run. Had 23 running back carries in this game. J.J. Taylor had a couple. Not going to give you much as a pass catcher. You hope he scores like he did in this game. You know, he's a middle to low end RB2. And the tight ends, both kind of getting involved. Both not really doing much. Just not much from this passing game. If you have to start Jacoby Myers or Aguilar, not the worst options, but you can obviously do better, I think. All right, we are going to the end of these 1 o'clock games. We have San Francisco 17, Philadelphia 11. This game was frustrating because I thought this game could go over the total. The total moved up over the course of the week, and I was like, all right, cool. Two teams that can run at a relatively fast pace, banged up secondary for San Francisco. Let's get some points here. Did not happen. The backfield here is interesting. Elijah Mitchell, 17 carries. Jermichael Hasty had 5. Sermon had 1. Hasty left with a shoulder injury, did return. Mitchell left with a shoulder injury, did return. Hasty left with an ankle injury, didn't return. He's going to be looked at. And then Trey Sermon had 1 carry, got hit really hard, fumbled, and now he's in concussion protocol. So, Jeff Wilson on IR. Raheem Mostert out for the year. Hasty's banged up. Sermon's in the concussion protocol. I mean, the performance wasn't great for Elijah Mitchell. 17 for 42. Had a touchdown called back that he was ruled down at the 1. But 17 carries. He's the clear number one running back on a team that wants to run the football. And this time next week, it could be Trenton Cannon. And then assuming they activate Kerryon Johnson off the practice squad, Elijah Mitchell is probably going to get 15 to 18 carries again. And he's got to be looked at as a low-end RB2 and a decent flex. I mean, if you spent like 50, 60% of your fab on Mitchell, again, we talked about it on the pod. I wouldn't have done it. I would have gone to like 30%. But after this game, you're not feeling awful about it because he's clearly going to be the guy. And the injury situation, I don't know what it is with San Francisco and running backs, but it's not even just Mostert who's missed time. It's the second string running back, it's the third string running back, and it's like every year. It's ridiculous. So Mitchell's, you know, he came back in the game, so he should be good to go. for week three. For the receivers, Debo, 6 for 93 on 8 targets. Again, he's being used more down the field. That's massive for Debo Samuel. It's massive. Last year, his yards before the catch per reception were in the negative. That's changing this year. And he's still going to get some, you know, jet sweeps and screens and stuff, because why wouldn't you? He's so good after the catch. He's like a running back when he gets the ball in his hands. But now if he's getting downfield targets, I mean, that's massive. That's absolutely massive. Brandon Ayuk did start this game. He played, I believe, 38 snaps. Debo played 49. His routes were kind of middle of the pack. He had 2 targets. I mean, Trent Sherfield, he's legitimately a part of this offense, right? And that was part of the reason why Ayuk didn't play much in week one. Sherfield, about 15 fewer snaps than Ayuk, but he had more targets on less routes. So it's like, I'm not saying Brent Ayuk, I'm worried about Ayuk. There's players you can buy low on. I'm not buying low on Brent Ayuk. And if you have him on your team, I don't think you can trade him. So you kind of just have to hold, right? I'm not actively trying to trade for Brent Ayuk. I think Debo, and again, I don't have Ayuk in any teams because I thought his ADP was too high. Debo clearly looks like the one here. George Kittle, rough game, but he's just on the field so much. I was talking about this yesterday. It's like George Kittle is so good and so valuable as a blocker that it hurts him in fantasy, because why wouldn't you have George Kittle in this scheme where you want to run the football a lot? Why wouldn't you want to have him block? He had 70 snaps, but only ran 30 pass routes. I don't want to say only. It led the team. But it's just hard for him to match the upside of Waller and Kittle, or Waller and Kelsey, when they're running a ton of routes and getting 8 targets at minimum a game. Kittle, for me, if you're worried about the targets and you feel like you can upgrade another position, I think trading away Kittle is fine, because I still think people will want to trade for him. At the same time, I also, it's weird. You usually have a situation where you either sell him or you trade for him. It's either or. It's one or the other. I think Kittle, you can make the case for either one. I really do. Kind of just depends on how your league mates view him. For the Eagles, Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts had no passing touchdowns this game. He threw for less than 200 passing yards. And he still scored around 20 fantasy points because he had 82 rushing yards and a touchdown. He had a 91-yard pass to Quez Watkins where it didn't result in a touchdown. But that was a great throw where it showed touch down the sideline. I mean, Hurts wasn't obviously as good in this game. I think a lot of it was Nick Sirianni's play calling. It wasn't great, especially in the red zone. But through 2 weeks, Jalen Hurts looks the part. He looks awesome. He really does. You're starting him every single week. And he had a touchdown called back. He had one down the right sideline to, I believe it was Jalen Reagor, where he apparently was out of bounds and then was the first person to touch the ball coming back in. You can't do that. So no touchdown. But Jalen Hurts, he's awesome. Absolutely awesome. Better days ahead from Devonta Smith. Still had 7 targets. Just the Eagles' offense wasn't great in this game. And the offenses as a whole weren't great in this game. So not worried about Devonta Smith. Miles Sanders. Miles Sanders is kind of interesting. Again, another player that he was one of those players I was afraid to be wrong about. I didn't really have a gauge on. He still leads the team in snaps and routes, but Kenneth Gainwell is getting legitimate usage right now. And he's clearly, by the way, again, second straight week, Boston Scott doesn't register a snap. So in case you thought week one was a fluke, it's not. Kenneth Gainwell is clearly the RB2 in Philadelphia. But I mean, Gainwell is second straight week. Gainwell is their hurry up running back, and their 2 minute drill running back, and probably their third down running back. So I think Sanders' upside is capped a little bit because Hurts is scoring rushing touchdowns and rushing, and then Gainwell's taking some passing downs work and 2 minute drill situations away. For me, Sanders is almost like Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and I think he's better than Clyde Edwards-Helaire, but not by much. But like his usage and his role is kind of very similar to me. The only difference is the Eagles don't have two all-world offensive players that just demand 10 plus targets every game. It's probably the only difference, I think, in their usage. So Vegas 26, Pittsburgh 17. Darren Waller has thrown for nearly 400 yards. He threw for under 400 yards against Baltimore and then 382 against Pittsburgh. Now, Pittsburgh's defense, I will say, no Devin Bush or Joe Hayden in this game. Tyson Alualu leaves early, and TJ Watt leaves early. So that's four of their best defensive players, like four of their five best defensive players, maybe six, because Minka and Casey Hayward are still there. But Carlos looked good. Like Brian Edwards had another touchdown called back, so he's the king of almost touchdowns through 2 weeks. Waller got off to a slow start, but if his bad games were 5 for 65, you're going to feel good about Darren Waller, obviously. You're starting him every week. The backfield, Josh Jacobs was ruled out in this game, so a lot of people thought it might be Kenny and Drake, but it was Peyton Barber. Drake was the pass-catching back, clearly, right? Five catches for 46 yards, kind of salvaged his day if you started him in a pinch. But, I mean, Jacobs clearly banged up, right? He had the toe, the ankle, he had a bunch of injuries coming out of that last week's Monday Night Football game. And he's obviously inactive for this one. And we see Peyton Barber as the early down kind of between the tackles grinder. And it was Kenny Drake as the passing downs back. Like Drake dominated the snaps, but Barber got the touches. So if you're in a pinch in deeper leagues, Barber, low end flex in standard leagues, but Drake's obviously the higher upside PPR play if Jacobs can't play next week. For the Steelers, Najee Harris didn't play 100% of the snaps, but it was close, right? I think he played like 90%+, though. Benny Snell actually had a touch in this game, so good for him. Harris had an awesome receiving touchdown this game. He also stiff-armed, I think it was Jonathan Abram, into another dimension. So the signs are there of him as a player, but this offensive line is still really bad. He only averaged 3.8 yards per carry. I don't understand why in a game that the Raiders were winning for most of it, but there was never like a ridiculous margin where the Steelers were out of it. If you're watching Roethlisberger through 2 weeks, he's done. Like he's got nothing left. You drafted Najee Harris. You spent a first-round draft pick on him. 40 pass attempts from Ben. Najee has 10 carries. He had five receptions and again the touchdown, so he had a fine fantasy performance. But like, Najee should be getting 20 carries in games like this, especially when Roethlisberger has nothing left. Deontay Johnson, another touchdown or another 12 targets in this game. He now has, I believe, dating back to last year in games where he's played the majority of snaps. I believe Deontay Johnson has double-digit targets in like 12 of his last 15 games where he's played the majority of the snaps. It's ridiculous. We do have to keep an eye on him, though. Meaningless play at the end of the game, down by 9 with seconds remaining. The Steelers run a play. Deontay Johnson gets tackled out of bounds at the end of the game, and he suffers what looks like a knee injury. Totally pointless play by the Steelers. So we really need to keep an eye on this for Deontay Johnson. Chase Claypool, 3 for 70, continues to be the downfield target for the Steelers, but it's just not pretty. Juju, again, massively low ADOT, 6 for 41, has a rushing touchdown this game. He's just kind of a high floor, low ceiling PPR play each week as like a wide receiver 3. But the Steelers offense it just has no pop. It has none. Roethlisberger can't throw the, like, if I'm defenses against Pittsburgh, I'm doing what Buffalo does every time they play them. I'm bringing the safeties down and just pressing these receivers at the line and making tackles, and that's it. And it's not pretty. It's not pretty. We have to keep an eye on Deontay Johnson, though. One of the highest percentage players in terms of first read targets, overall targets. His absence would obviously be massive for this offense. And Juju and Claypool would be probably must-start receivers if Deontay Johnson were to miss time. All right, let's go to the 4 o'clock games. Arizona 34, Minnesota 33. I don't know what else to say about Kyler Murray. 400 passing yards, 3 touchdowns, adds a rushing touchdown. He's ridiculous. There's a handful of cheat codes in fantasy. Christian McCaffrey. I think Devontae Adams is in that range. Kyler Murray is a cheat code. He's an absolute cheat. Travis Kelce, like he's a cheat code. He's got Jacksonville next week. Enough said. The backfield. Edmonds looks good as a pass catcher, and he's clearly the pass catcher. James Conner did not catch a pass in this game. Edmonds catches 5, adds 8 carries. He looks better than Conner, but Conner's getting the short yards work still. They both had 8 carries in this game. You're starting Edmonds as a weekly PPR flex. You're probably not starting Conner right now unless you're desperate. And then the receivers, man. Rondale Moore should not be on a single waiver wire in any league in fantasy. 7 catches, 114 yards, and a touchdown on 8 targets. He had that 77-yard touchdown. 8 targets leads the team. Again, it's early, but through 2 weeks, Rondale Moore leads the team in targets, despite being 4th in snaps, and I believe 4th in routes, still just behind Christian Kirk. We talked about it in the Waiver Wire podcast last week. Sooner rather than later, Rondale Moore is going to leapfrog Christian Kirk in snaps and routes. Maybe even A.J. Green soon. A.J. Green actually looked really good in this game, by the way. Scored a touchdown, 3 for 44. Rondale Moore, and when he was drafted, I was like, this is awesome for Dynasty. I'm not sure how good he'll be in redraft. But through 2 weeks, despite not even playing a full allotment of snaps and seeing a full route percentage, like, he's been pretty relevant. And I do think he's going to pass Christian Kirk in playing time. And he fits this offense so well because he's getting so many screens, and that's a huge part of this offense. And he's so good after the catch. Yeah, the trajectory for Rondale Moore is nice. It's up. It's up and up for Rondale Moore. Hopkins, weird game. He got off to a great start. Didn't think in a game where it's 34-33, Hopkins finishes with 4 for 54 and a touchdown, but only 4 targets was kind of shocking. But he's scored 3 touchdowns already. You're starting him every week. Maybe this is a situation where it's like he's not going to see the exact target share we saw last year where it was massive with Rondale Moore there and A.J. Green there. Max Williams is actually heavily involved here. 7 for 94 on 7 targets for Max Williams. It's tough to immediately just look at this game and say, okay, it's a fluke. Max Williams, don't pick him up. It's not anything that we should look at. I think he's somebody you should look to add, but don't go crazy. Because, yeah, he dominated the snaps among the other tight ends, but the other tight ends on this team are Darryl Daniels and Demetrius Harris. And this team still runs 3 and 4 wide as much as anybody in football, and especially with Rondale Moore ascending, you'll probably see more 3, or definitely continue to see 3, and more 4 wide. So I think he's somebody you can like speculatively pick up, but I'm not going crazy on Max Williams, but he did make some big plays for this team. But yeah. Kyler's awesome. They get Jacksonville next week, so I probably can start Rondale Moore next week. Honestly, I had to start him in a pinch, and that was great. It was great, so probably start him next week against Jacksonville. Just bleed wide as your production on their defense. Tampa Bay 48, Atlanta 25. Look, it's going to be one of these receivers is going to have a down game every week. Week one was Mike Evans. This week it's Antonio Brown. It was 1 for 17. Evans. And it's you can tell in this game, right? After Evans had, 30 yards on 3 catches in week one, you could immediately tell that Brady wanted to get him involved. For I think the first play of the game or the first pass of the game went to Evans. And then he scores 2 end zone touchdowns where the plays were clearly, you could tell, were designed for Mike Evans. He finishes with 5 for 75 and 2 touchdowns on 9 targets, easily leads the team. Godwin, 4 for 62 and a touchdown on 5 targets. And then Gronk, 4 for 39 and 2 more touchdowns. I wanted to say, this is ridiculous. Trade Gronk while you can. His value will never be higher. He's not going to keep scoring touchdowns. But at the same time, he's playing with Tom Brady. Like, where it's just like, I don't like to use this analysis a lot, but it's like, they just have that obvious, like, they don't even have to, like, talk to each other type of connection. Like, I hate saying that, but it's like, if Gronk had any other quarterback, I'd be like, all right, this is ridiculous, trade him. And you can obviously still try to sell him high, right? You can get Like, if you can trade Gronk in a piece for Darren Waller or something, yes, do it. Or if you can trade Gronk for in a piece for an upgrade at another position, I would do it. And I wonder if we start to see Cameron Brate and OJ Howard play more as the season goes on. But, like, Gronk, he's obviously not Gronk from 2012 or whatever, 13. But, like, he looks good. Like, he does look good. It's not like he's just catching wide open touchdowns off design plays where everybody looks at Mike Evans and Godwin. Like, he looks good. So, I think you should try at least to sell high. But if you can't manage to, like, don't feel bad about it. Like, Gronk, he looks good, like I said. And it's just, you know, Brady has 5 touchdowns. There's going to be games where maybe next week it's Chris Godwin that has the down game, or it's Gronk, or it's like, it's hard even in a game where Brady throws 5 touchdowns where all 5 of these pass catchers, if you include, you know, one of the, or all 5 of these players, if you include the running backs, are going to be fantasy relevant. Speaking of the running backs, Bruce Arians said that Ronald Jones would get the start in this game. I believe he did. Fournette played 5 more snaps, ran 4 more routes, had 2 more targets, and ultimately ended up with 11 carries to Jones' 6. Fournette looked pretty good in this game, 11 for 52, and he adds 4 catches. Still, if you're starting a Buccaneers running back, you're probably not thrilled about it, and you're probably not loving your lineup. By the way, Tampa Bay at Los Angeles Rams next week. That should be fun. For Atlanta, Matt Ryan, he had a really good bad game. Like, if you watch, he made some bad throws. A lot of the throws were deflected. I will give him that, though. But he finishes with 300 yards and 2 touchdowns. Calvin Ridley, good to see him back. 7 for 63 and a touchdown on 10 targets. Kyle Pitts, 5 for 73 on 6 targets. The snaps between Hayden Hurst and Kyle Pitts were really close in week 1. The discrepancy was a lot larger in favor of Kyle Pitts this week, so that's good to see. Pitts gets the Giants next week, who have allowed touchdowns now in consecutive weeks to Alberto of the Broncos and Ricky Seals-Jones. So they're giving up production to tight ends that aren't even focal points of their offense. And Kyle Pitts is being moved all around the formation. Kyle Pitts is going to smash in week 3. I love him. What about this backfield, though? Mike Davis has 9 carries. He did have 7 catches for 25 yards. But Cordarrelle Patterson, I think he's a thing. I think he should be added. I don't think you should start him, but he was already operating as the clear backup running back in week 1. I believe Wayne Gallman wasn't even active again in this game. Yeah, it was literally Patterson and Davis. Patterson has 2 touchdowns in this game, 1 receiving, 1 short yardage on a run. I mean, this hurts Mike Davis. Like, they're going to clearly use Cordarrelle Patterson. And, like, we talked about, Debro mentioned Mike Davis is somebody who should trade away last week. And the schedule continues to get rough, right? Like, they have the Giants next week. It's middling matchup. I guess it's not bad. But there's some rough matchups ahead. And now Cordarrelle Patterson is getting, you know, 7 to 10 touches a game. And he saw short yards work in this game. It's not great. It's definitely not great for Mike Davis. So, as weird as it is to say, I think Cordarrelle Patterson is somebody you should probably look to add. All right, 2 games left. Dallas 20, Chargers 17. Tony Pollard. Listen, I was high on Zeke all offseason. He was my running back 3. But I'd be foolish to not change my stance, right? Zeke should not be viewed as a top 5 running back anymore. I still think he's a low-end RB1. But Tony Pollard played, I think, 21 snaps in this game, and he had 16 touches. Like, he obviously, everybody knows he looks more explosive than Zeke. They designed touches for him. You know, they designed, like, a lot of these, kind of like these Robert Woods type plays, the Rams run, where they play Zeke in the backfield, and then and then Tony Pollard comes around in motion, and they give him a jet sweep. That's how he scored his touchdown. I mean, 109 yards and a touchdown on 13 carries. He adds 3 catches for 31 yards. Zeke had a fine game, too. 16 for 71 and a score, 2 catches for 26 yards. Like, I'm not at the point where you can comfortably start Tony Pollard and you're still starting Zeke. But Pollard's not only usage, but just efficiency and what he brings to this offense, it definitely pushes Zeke down to, like, lower range RB1 rather than a clear top 5 player at the position. But it's smart by Dallas, right? You're not going to just take Zeke off the field, but mixing Tony Pollard and playing them together, especially with Michael Gallup hurt, just adding more, you know, explosiveness to the offense with CeeDee Lamb and Amari Cooper, it just makes a ton of sense. Speaking of CeeDee Lamb, 8 for 81 and on 9 targets, adds a 13-yard run. He's awesome. You're starting him every week. Cooper had a down game here. Give credit to Asante Samuel Jr., though, who had him in coverage a lot. He looked really good in this game. He covered him a lot with tight coverage. But you're starting CeeDee and Amari every week. They have Philly on Monday Night Football next week. So, and Dak wasn't great in this game, but you know, unlike week one where they abandoned the run, Dallas relied on the run in this game. You know, Pollard and Zeke combined for 29 carries. Lamb had a carry. Cedric Wilson had a carry. So 31 rushes for the team. And it worked. And it was like, we knew Dallas was going to throw 50 times again. So obviously Dak's still going to be really good. And maybe next week, I know the Eagles' defensive line has some injuries, but maybe against that front with Fletcher Cox and Javon Hargrave, maybe they go back to throwing the football more. For the Chargers, Austin Eckler. Polar opposite usages from week one and week two. Week one, 15 carries, 2 carries inside the 5, 0 targets. This week, just 9 carries, but he has 54 yards. But then what we love to see, the 9 targets, caught all 9 of them for 61 yards. Left in this game, I think he got evaluated for a concussion, came back in. Then he was getting his ankle taped on the sideline. I believe he came back in again. So maybe a little bit banged up, but he's not hurt. He's not injured. He'll be good to go. For week three, starting Austin Eckler every single week. Are we starting Mike Williams every single week? The breakout season is upon us for Mike Williams. Through 2 weeks, he has one more target than Keenan Allen. He has double-digit targets in both games. He has touchdowns in both games. He went for 7 for 91 and a score in this one. His ADOT last year was almost 16. It was 6th highest in the NFL. This year, it's around 10. They're using him way more in intermediate, which is great. He scored his touchdown off of like a quick screen where he got past the made plays after the catch and dove into the end zone. Usually Mike Williams is getting targets deep down the field where he has to jump 50 feet in the air, take awkward landings, get targets deep in the corner of the end zone. That's changing in Joe Lombardi's offense. And he talked about it all offseason. And we're seeing it. Like it's not a mirage. It's not a 2 week sample where it's like, okay, let me see it. Like it's right in front of us. Mike Williams, I'm starting every week unless I'm loaded at receiver. And again, Keenan Allen, down game, quote unquote, 4 for 108, like 8 targets for him. You're starting him every week. Jared Cook had a touchdown called back in this game. You still overall are pretty, he's in that same range we talked about. Cole Kmet, Mike Gesicki. And then Justin Herbert. If you can trade for Justin Herbert, do it. He had a touchdown and 2 picks in this game. He had so many plays called back off penalty. The Jared Cook touchdown. He had a long pass to Mike Williams called back via penalty. But arm talent from just watching Justin Herbert. He's so good. This offense is going to be fun. They have a shootout potentially on tap with the Chiefs next week. If you can trade for Justin Herbert, I know he's thrown for over 300 yards in both games, but I would try to get Justin Herbert on my team. But I'm in love with Mike Williams. I love what I'm seeing from him. I love the usage. I love where he's running his routes compared to last year. Love the targets. And again, if those intermediate parts of the field continue for him, the targets can be a lot more consistent like they have been through the first 2 weeks. All right, we'll close out the games with Tennessee 33, Seattle 30. Derrick Henry just touched the ball again. I mean, 41 touches. It's the most in a game in the NFL since 2016 where David Johnson had 41 against the Seattle Seahawks. I don't know what's crazier. And I'm being serious when I say this. The 35 carries or the 6 catches for Derrick Henry. He had 6 catches. I mean, it's amazing. You're starting him every week. Julio Jones, his demise is greatly exaggerated. 6 for 128 on 8 targets. Should have had a touchdown. It was ruled a not touchdown, but I watched it. His feet were in. Should have been a touchdown. A.J. Brown down game. Had some drops. 3 for 43 on 9 targets. It was good to see Titans offense get back on track. It was a slow start again. This offensive line is definitely a concern. And Tannehill's not been great in fantasy through 2 weeks. He's taken a lot of hits and a lot of sacks. This offensive line for Tennessee has been rough. But starting Henry every week. I still think you're starting AJ Brown and you're starting Julio Jones. And again, the second half was all Derrick Henry. Like, just couldn't stop him. For Seattle, Russell Wilson remains insanely efficient. 343 and 2 on 31 pass attempts. Tyler Lockett, another 60-plus yard receiving touchdown. 8 for 178, a touchdown on 11 targets. Metcalf also had 11 targets, but only turned them into 6 catches for 53 yards. I think we can say Lockett over Metcalf right now. You're starting both, so it doesn't really matter, but like, I feel a little bit better about like the Russell Wilson to Tyler Lockett deep ball connection is easily the best in the NFL. Maybe you throw in Mahomes and Tyreek, but this is the most efficient. It's been the most efficient duo in the NFL for years, and it's off to another great start here. Chris Carson, 13 carries for 31 yards. The efficiency was bad, but he has 2 short yardage touchdowns in this game. Alex Collins had 1 carry. It came late in the fourth quarter where they were. So Chris Carson's clearly the lead back. He had 13 of the 14 running back carries. Didn't have a catch, but you're starting Chris Carson every week as well. And Gerald Everett, like, it's tough to trust. You know, he's playing a ton of snaps but he's splitting a ton of snaps with Will Disley. So the routes aren't through the roof. By the way, I just realized I didn't talk about the Vikings in that Arizona game. So I'll get to them in a second. But yeah, like, he's splitting snaps with Will Disley at this point. The routes are still in favor of Everett, but like, he's third behind Metcalf and Lockett. Even Freddie Swaim got involved in this game. So still, for the most part, starting the Seahawks. I'll go back to the Vikings real quick because I realized I didn't mention them. Dalvin Cook ran well in this game, had a couple injuries, came back in the game, but I think he suffered an ankle injury late and Madison came in. Definitely need to keep an eye on that. Hopefully he's good to go. And then Jefferson scores, Thielen scores, but KJ Osborne, I would pick him up off waivers. We saw in week one, the Vikings run way more 3 wide and it made sense with Irv Smith out for the season. Continued this week and like, he's produced. I mean, I know he's playing with 3 incredible offensive players still in this offense, but he's been producing and we have to look at that. I mean, Osborne in this game, he was still well behind Thielen and Jefferson in snaps because he's not going to play in 2 wide sets, but the point is they're playing more 3 wide and he ran 24 pass routes and he had 5 targets and he had a long touchdown. So KJ Osborne, this isn't a great week for waivers, I don't think, but I think he's kind of near the top of the list, honestly. And then Adam Thielen continues to score touchdowns, so he's good at football. Maybe we shouldn't have written him off either. But all right, that'll do it for the week 2 review episode. It's tough talking for an hour by yourself, but I enjoy doing it. It hopefully helps you out, but at the same time, it helps me out. It helps me get an even better view on some of these games and what we can apply going forward. Before we get out of here, though, I want to talk real quick about Top Prop Sports. Again, we have a league going on at FTN. Just adds a ton of competitiveness, right? You don't have to wait till the end of the season to claim your cash prizes. You can import your league on Top Prop Sports, enter your email, type the code FTN, ESPN, Yahoo, whatever league you're in. You import it to Top Prop Sports and you invite your league mates and you can, you know, make weekly contests against your league mates for cash prizes. So add some more smack talk, add some more competitiveness to your redraft league. Again, that's toppropsports.com. Use the code FTN. D-Bro will be back with me on Tuesday and Wednesday for the Waiver Wire and Trade 4 episodes. A lot to talk about, a lot of players that are going to be on our minds, so you don't want to miss that. Of course, we'll be streaming it as well on Twitter, so you can get your questions in. We do Q&As at the end of each of these episodes, so that's very fun as well. And then, of course, Thursday's a DFS episode, game by game. As it stands right now, I don't even know who's joining me on the pod, so that'll be fun to see. Ton of great guests out there to bring on the pod. Hopefully week 2 was great for you guys. Thanks for listening as always. Best of luck on Monday Night Football. We'll be back on Tuesday. For Fade the Chalk, this has been Adam Pfeiffer. Peace out.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Fade the Chalk with Derek and Adam. Make sure to follow your hosts and the podcast on Twitter at @DBRO_FFB, at @APPfeiffer24, and at @ChalkFade. Smash that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.